Hardee's invites you to try the new Fiery Famous Star. Sizzling charbroiled burger bliss, dripping with creamy zesty fiery sauce. Join us for the new Fiery Famous Star. Only at Hardee's. Feed your happy. Available for a limited time at participating Hardee's restaurants. Price and participation may vary. Hardee's invites you to creamy, zesty, fiery, hand-breaded bliss. Join us for hand-breaded chicken tenders dipped in new fiery sauce. Only at Hardee's. Feed your happy. Available for a limited time at participating Hardee's restaurants. Price and participation may vary.
What is Urban Sense? Urban Sense is the largest online marketplace for service providers that offers services to customers, from housekeeping to simple carpentry. Or it could be that your car broke down and you want a mechanic, or you could be the person who has the skill. Well, do not hold your back. Join Urban Sense today. Join millions of other people that are using Urban Sense to get things done. We are here to bridge the gap between a service provider and customer from the comfort of your fingertips. Join Urban Sense today by simply going to www.urbansenseglobal.com or download the app both on Play Store for Android and App Store for your iOS to sign up today. Urban Sense, solution at your fingertips.
Matt G, the Ghost Lady, and Len Moleko.
Hinda, what do you mean, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to it. It's another episode of Podcast and Chill. And I'm chilling with SA's very own Justin Timberlake.
Whatever it is.
Is it safe to call you that?
No, I think Jay something's a little bit better.
But yeah, anyway, man. Dude, we've been wanting to do this for so long, bro.
Man, I was actually thinking a lot about this and thinking about, there's one weird-ass memory that I have, and you booked us for a gig.
Yeah.
And it was some, I'm trying to remember whether it was in Midrand or something, but I
it
remember
was by
this.
Near Cosmo City.
Yeah, I have these like random little images of that gig. But yeah, we've come a long way, dude.
You guys charged me 20K, and you needed to perform at my gig first. Because you had another gig to
20K
go to.
The days, yeah. Where every promoter was making so much dollar, dude. I remember once in East London, we did a gig. For a guy, and we were charging around there, and he's like, he came to us after the show, man, and he's like, yo, man, thank you, man, I'm gonna buy myself an Audi now, bruh. I'm like, yo, dude, I'm literally getting like 5K from this gig. This guy's speaking about an Audi.
Oh, anyway, man. But do you remember how we first met?
Remind me. I don't, in other words.
You were at Soul Candy. I don't know what you were doing.
Yes, yeah. I was working there.
You were working there, man.
Before Mikasa, I was running Soul Candy Studios. I was managing the studios. I was cleaning up the studios for other artists.
Yeah.
It was, it was.
As in like literally cleaning?
Like literally cleaning, preparing their teas, making sure that the monitors were in place on how they want. Yeah, I did that for Brahu. I did it for Judas Supuma. I did it for TKZ. I did it for
Hold on, let me turn my mic on.
My mic, just lift it up. Please.
This one,
yeah. Yeah, that one. Yeah, there we go. Thank you. Yeah.
I cleaned rooms for JR, for...
You kidding?
Everybody, bro. JR, actually, I just want to give a shout out to JR, because JR was actually one of the first people that actually made me believe in myself without him even knowing. Mm. I was cleaning the studios. They were rehearsing. I was in another studio jamming my guitar. And he came in and was like, yo, who's that voice? And it was that moment of recognition of, he was the guy that had the song. It was the circle. No, circle.
Oh, make the circle bigger.
Make the circle bigger, right?
Yeah.
And this guy came into the room to listen to my voice. And I never thought much about myself. You know, I wasn't as confident as I've become about my craft now.
Yeah.
Back then. So yeah, that's where it began. So that's where we met, at Soul Candy offices.
Yeah. So Soul Candy gives me a call. I think it's Ricardo. They're like, listen, they're trying to do this whole... online radio chart show, like Hot 99. Remember Hot 99?
Exactly.
Yeah, Hot 99 vibe. So they wanted me to be the
presenter.
To present it. Yeah,
I was doing the whole show. I was trying to put the whole show together.
Yeah, and you were giving me directions.
Yes. Damn, dude. Nah, these are beautiful memories.
And then Mpoza walks in. Yes. He's like, do you know this guy? I'm like, I don't know who he is. I don't fucking care. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just some white guy who's an
engineer. Yeah, exactly. Another white engineer.
It's like, no, these guys, this Mikasa, he hooked up with Duda, and they got a big song coming up. I was like, okay, cool. You know how many times you hear that?
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, These Streets came out.
Damn.
Boom. I was like, shit, sure. Maybe I should have given him some attention.
No, man, you know, like, it's been a crazy ride, but I think that when I think of you, like, I know that you've had a lot of problems with people,
yeah.
But I've never had a problem with you.
Oh, yeah.
Never.
Yeah. No,
wasn't even that thing of like, nah, you didn't, nah, man, I've always enjoyed, even when you were doing, when your whole journey, I've enjoyed everything that you've done.
Yeah.
And sometimes we need these moments to birth new things.
100%.
And that's what I was saying to you off air. I was like saying, dude, I'm really proud of you, man. Like, I've been sitting on your YouTube page and I've been watching the content. And it's dope.
Yeah.
People need to check it out because it's the new age entertainment.
Yeah,
YouTube is TV, bro.
It is, bro.
And people, the other day I had this epiphany. I was like, damn, YouTube is my DSTV.
Mm.
I'm sitting here flipping through whatever I feel like watching.
Yeah.
And your channel's great, bro. So shout out to you, man.
Do you still have your channel?
I still have my channel.
Okay.
It's a lot of hard work. I'm spending a lot of money. I'm trying to make it... A thing. Last month was the first time we made a bit of profit.
Oh, okay.
Nothing to write home about, but it was enough for us to get sushi for lunch that day. So like, that's a big thing, bro.
Nothing wrong with sushi, bro. How much was your first paycheck from YouTube? Mine was $8,000.
Damn, I don't even know what my first paycheck was from a Mikasa point of view, because we've had some videos that have done well. It's so small. If you got $8,000, imagine if we got $8,000, you split it by three and you're playing a percentage to management. So, like, shout out to you for being independent, you know. But it's, that's the thing about being in a band. It's the hardest thing about being in a band is feeling that you need to share everything, even though sometimes you feel like you're doing more than the guys.
Yeah.
This is an old story for a band. It's a common thing. But yeah, YouTube is not our main stream of income.
But what happens? That's actually, you raise a good point there. What happens with the videos? Like, if your video as Mikasa has, like, let's say 100 million views, the money goes to you or does it go to your label?
Well, it all depends on what master it is. So, I mean, we've got four albums out. Excuse me. We've got four albums. We've technically done five. There was a platinum edition one. The first two albums are owned by Soul Candy, master-wise. And then the everything thereafter is owned by Mikasa.
Okay.
And it just depends on that. So, and it's not a bad thing. Yeah. You know, this whole talk about like you should own your masters. Like, if you can get your masters back, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to kind of sacrifice a little bit of that, to be able to start up our thing, because we had nothing.
Yes. We started from the bottom.
Yeah. I guess that's a whole nother discussion, but how it works is it would be split by four essentially. And it's the way that we even set up our new business is we always split everything by four, so that there's a portion for each one of us and there's a portion for the business.
Mm.
So wherever we make money, even off a gig, we cut everything by four. It's income for the guys. And then it's that thing of like not being stupid, of not investing back into your business.
Yes.
That's a really important thing. And when I could have so much more money in the bank if I just kind of just carried on doing what I was doing that was making money. But what I did is I've been investing into other things.
So Mikasa is an entity. That's the fourth.
That's it. There's a fourth member. We've always spoken about this damn fourth member. It's like, you know, we still have to pay the tax guy. And then there's still this fourth member there, which becomes even harder. But it's helped us a lot in doing cool things. We've gone on tours because of that money. We've tried opening up doors with that money. So it's a good thing. It's a good mentality.
Cool, man. We'll talk about that later on. If you're wondering why I'm having coffee, this nigga's the first nigga to make me have coffee on the show.
Not just any coffee. I mean, it's a cappuccino from a...
Hey, my nigga. It's because we're coming at you live. Man. Yeah, we're coming at you live from Jay Something's house. Now I know how the 1% lives. This house is dope, man.
You know, it's weird, man. Like, it's even if I am the 1%, I feel like I've worked so flipping hard, bro.
Mm.
I've sacrificed so much of my life to be able to be where I am today. And sometimes I wonder how much more should I push? Because I think like things come into perspective when new things come into your life that mean more than
kids.
The old things.
Mm.
And I've always wanted to be famous, world famous, because I wanted to influence. I didn't want to be famous for like the fame's sake. I don't care about fame, bro. I honestly don't. I appreciate being loved, and that's the most beautiful thing about this whole thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, I look at this house every day, and I'm like,
dude,
wow, man, this is because of a song.
Yeah,
it's insane. Yeah. So I feel really thankful for that.
Let's take it back, man. Why did you guys leave Portugal when you were seven?
Yeah. Oh, wow. So we're going that far back. So, so I was born in the south of Portugal in a small town called Portimão, in the south where all the beautiful beaches are.
Is that far from where Ronaldo was born?
So Ronaldo was born in Madeira on an island. So it's a bit far, but it's still the same thing. There's this huge... we're not even going to talk about that. My father worked in the hospitality industry, running hotels and starting hotels up for different hotel groups. He specialized in food and beverage. And our family, we grew up in hotels. My mother opened up the Sun City... the Dome.
Yeah.
She opened up that. She did the PR. Catering. Yeah. She threw the... Who's the guy that owns or used to own Sun International?
I know the guy, man.
That rich guy.
Yeah, the rich guy. Yeah,
she did... Like she... My father opened up Cascades, the hotel, before I was born. And my brother lived there. I've got a 10-year... a brother that's 10 years older than me. So they used to live here. My father's family originates from Mozambique.
Okay.
His mother... and they went back to Portugal, and then we moved back to South Africa when I was 7. So my mother was pregnant with me in Venda. They were living my father.
You're kidding!
I swear.
No wonder we get along.
Venda. It's a weird thing, bro, because I've done a couple of gigs in Venda, and every time I go back there, it feels somewhat spiritual, and yeah, I don't want to get carried away, but it does. It feels really good.
No way, I swear,
dude. My father was running Venda Sun. For Sun International.
Yeah, and it's still there.
It's still there. And I had the weirdest moment of my life. When we went there, I walked into the hotel because that's where they had our holding room. And this old Magogo came up to me and she says, "Yo, are you Carlos' son?" And I freaked out, you know, because my dad then had already passed away.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Yes." And she's like, "I worked with your pops."
Wow.
And I'm like, "Wow." So anyway, we moved back to South Africa. So my mother wanted me to be born in Portugal with the family and everything. So... moved to Portugal and then moved back when I was 7. My father got a job opportunity in the Eastern Cape, and that's where I grew up. I grew up in the staff village of the hotel. Started to learn rugby ball and Xhosa and just the culture, you know, like just taking in. I was this sponge, you know, and I was freaked out by a lot of things. Like I'd never seen. I don't recall seeing a black person.
Yeah.
So when I arrived, there were these two kids and they were tanned, yo. I'm like, yo, these oaks have been chilling in the sun for long. And then they become my best mates. Their names were Mbasa and Mpiwe.
Yeah.
And they started to teach me everything about things. I mean, in a kid way, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess that's, I pay a lot of tribute to that because I think that's where I really started to become an open-minded.
And at that time, those kids wouldn't know color at that time, you
bro,
know?
Bro, I didn't understand it.
It's post-apartheid.
And I mean that in the most sincere way. Like, I really thought, because in Portugal, people go and sit on the beach and they tan. And the more you tan, the darker you get. So when I arrived, I was like, wow, these people are like serious about tanning. But it's the innocence of a child, you know? And I think like, one of the secrets to life and success for me is innocence. It's for you to just start a damn podcast and next thing you know, you're making
I'm at Jay something's
dollar.
House.
Oh, well, it's going to be higher things than this, but yeah. So yeah, I moved here when I was 7 and then grew up in the Eastern Cape.
What school did you go to?
I went to a small little farm school called Shaw Park Primary School. There was 3 of us in grade 7. Me and 2 girls.
You kidding?
Yeah. And the one girl, her name was Nicole, she used to open up the bowling for our under 13 team because we didn't have enough players. But we used to whoop ass, bro. Like, people were like, oh, damn, there's a girl opening up the bowling, and she used to steam in them, and it was great. So I grew up that side. And then I went to Grahamstown for high school.
Yeah.
I went to Graham College, and that's where I really started to kind of, I went to boarding school. Started to really understand of individuality and being on my own. And
did you get picked on because, like, you know, people thought you were trying to be black?
No, man. You know, it's so weird, dude. For the first time, on my birthday, a couple of days ago, I was at Saint. I don't even understand. And I've never, ever thought to myself, and this is a very personal thing, I've never thought, I'm trying to be black. Never. And the friends that I have around me are so comfortable with who
I am.
Don't
make you feel like that.
I've never felt out of that. Even when I started to, this Mikasa thing, I started to get a lot of it, but it was very lighthearted.
Yeah.
It was like, yo, dude, you're a black dude trapped inside a white man's skin. And I was like, no, I'm actually just the dude. And I don't know, like, I love dancing. And if that makes me like black, I don't understand. But anyway, but this girl came up to me and we were talking in a group of guys And then this girl was there. Mm-hmm. And I said, Eish, man. Like, how I talk. Yeah. Like, this is how I talk. I don't know. I said, Eish, son. And she was like, please don't do that. Please don't come and try and be black. I'm like, what? You don't know me.
Yeah.
Like, this is how I am when I'm with my wife. Who are you to tell me anyway? So that really impacted me. I came home and I was like, am I trying to be black?
Mm.
For the first time, dude, like doing Mikasa for 9 years, yeah. I had this moment. But I never got picked on.
Yeah.
That you must understand, I came here 7. I didn't know how to speak a word of English. Nothing.
Okay.
And I learned isiXhosa, Afrikaans and English at the same time. I was being told about lobola and malva pudding at the same time. Like, it was the same. Like, it was one thing. So I took everything in. It wasn't like a... And then when I started high school, I had a colored... He's still my best friend today. His name is Brent. And we grew up together. So I would always be in the colored area. Mm. So I learned that culture. It was that... That was my vibe. And yeah. That's still my vibe today. It's a whole mixed thing. I'm married to a Tswana woman.
Mm.
I never wanted to be married to a black woman.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be married to a woman that I love. Dig.
Yeah.
Dude, and I found that in a girl that was not... That was a slightly more tan than me. Yeah. That's all. That's...
I think people, society especially, like to box people. And sometimes you're just being you, bro.
Yeah, man. I know, man. I hate those boxes of things. It just frustrates me so much. But you know what? I think like...
Because like I was saying on my podcast the other week, like even me, my best friend was Jewish, dude.
Yeah.
I went to his bar mitzvah, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know color until I started working in corporate.
Mm.
Then I was like, oh shit, there's racism? Yeah, shit. Like, I had Indian friends.
Sure.
Colored friends. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's that like that innocence. And then I think also like what I've always been aware of is that innocence is important, but then also having an understanding of what what's really happening.
Yeah, reality.
It's also important.
Okay.
So it's like, it's also understanding that there is a lot of racism going around.
Got you.
And I think with everything that's going on at the moment in the country, like, I've never ever thought I'm going to leave. Mm. And I'm a guy that has a European passport. Mm. My whole family can leave. Mm. But I've always thought that I'm part of the solution because I'm here for a reason. Mm. And I think that that comes with the realization of what the current affairs are. Mm. And the fact that, yeah, dude, like, you're not racist or you... I low-key think that we're all racist in a form. Like, that we all have that because that's how we were brought up.
Yeah.
I don't mean it in a drastic sense, but we all have, like...
Even tribalism.
Sexism. All these things. We have an element of it because it's passed down to you. The other day, somebody said to me, like, how unique are you? Because we're all trying to be unique, right? We all think that we're unique. But they said, are you not just the culmination of a whole bunch of experiences that other people have given you?
Mm.
And that made sense to me because, like, I'm this way because of that person. And you're actually not that unique. You're just like a string that is never ending. And you just jump on. People jump on you and make you who you are. You know, you aren't like a creative idea. Like, you think it's creative. And then you go Google and you're like, okay, I'm not that creative.
Do you still like your mom's prawns?
Still love my mom's prawns, my mom's food. It's a really emotional thing. I dig it.
Can you make my shonja since you're from Venice?
My shonja, I can't, dog. But I guess I can. You know, like, that's the thing about this food thing, dude. It's like, it's really weird how, like, people come up to me and be like, yo, can you do this? And I'm like, sure, I'll just Google it. I'll just go and find the recipe, bro. Like, I'm not like a... Yeah, anyway.
You still steal your mom's clothes, bro. Where did you hear about that?
So when I was in junior school, I had this like, not even a low key. It was like a mad obsession with Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And I was like, literally, like, I would try and practice the moonwalk, and I'd even practice grabbing my crotch, you know, because that's what he did. I was like, woo, you know, that's kind of the vibe. And I went to school one day, and I took my mom's, like, she had these like white gloves, and you know Michael Jackson had the white gloves and the tight vest,
the whole vibe.
And I went, and I remember the principal called my mother that day, and she's like, yo, your son's really got to stop listening to Michael Jackson because it's getting out of hand. He's just grabbing his crotch everywhere. still a huge fan. Not stealing mom's clothes anymore though.
And what did you think, as because I know you love Michael Jackson, dude. What did you think when these accusations and allegations came out?
Sure.
As a musician as well.
It's a tricky one. It's a tricky one because I guess a lot of people have compared it to like the R. Kelly thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the R. Kelly thing was really hard to swallow because I really digged his music.
Yeah.
And I had to make a decision based on the experiences that I've had around R. Kelly because we opened up for him. Like, I don't want to talk too much about that, but the glimpse that I got around that night, it kind of made sense to me around what was going on.
Everything clicked.
It was weird. It was weird. It was lank weird. I'd never seen that at a show before. And then came this like this whole thing of Michael since he's been dead. There's always been that thing around him. But one of the things that I've always struggled with, and I really hope I don't get into trouble for saying this, but like for me with Michael, I really feel that even if he's done a lot of bad things, I really feel that a lot of that I attribute to his upbringing.
Yeah.
Like I really feel like this dude had an unfair upbringing, and mm-hmm. it goes back to leadership as mm-hmm. a parent. Mm-hmm. I really feel like what he was put through as a kid was unfair. And I mean, I don't know how much you know about Michael, but I mean, I read a book written by his brother. And the father was really heavy on Michael to the point where he felt like he didn't have a childhood. And I think when he grew up, not that by any means justifies for you to go and do anything that we don't even know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
Right. Because there's been both sides of the story. I refuse to watch the documentary or the thing that's on about Michael.
Yeah.
Number one, because he's dead and he can't back himself up. Yeah. Number two, I'm a serious fan. Mm. Number three, when I listen to his music, it's very different to an R. Kelly.
Yeah.
There's nothing there about I'm going to take you to the after party and the strip clubs and whatever, and popping mm-hmm. bottles. Like this oak was trying to use music to heal the world, in my opinion. Yeah. And that's where that's why I loved him. I didn't love Michael as the celebrity. Mm. I don't actually know much about him in that sense. I know his music. And his music for me, why I liked it so much is he was a dude that was the king of pop, that was writing the biggest hits in the world, and they were all about pure things.
Wow.
They were about happiness, about love, about changing
the world. If you strip it down.
Bro, like, and that's the thing. Like, now when you look at the world now, music is very different.
Mm.
You have to write about the things that the kids want to hear. And unfortunately, bro, like, and it breaks my heart, you know, like, breaks my heart because music is such a powerful tool to change people. I feel like with this whole Michael thing, like it really does make me sad because I really don't want it to be true.
Mm.
And then also, I'm also playing the card of like, I don't want to look.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing.
Gotcha. Speaking about music, how did you meet the guys? Because Dr. Duda had been in the game for a long time. He did change the world.
Yeah, no, dude. Duda did so many hit tracks for Mbuso, for Fresh.
Yeah.
And then changed the world. I mean, you know, you should have a sit down with him because I mean, his story is also phenomenal.
Yeah.
Met them random nights. I was working at the studios. Soul Candy was throwing a party at the roof of the Radisson Hotel. My cousin, who moved me to Joburg,
okay.
His name is Sergio. Shout out to Sergio because he literally birthed my whole career, in my opinion. They were throwing a party and he was having his, how do you say, like when your fiance and your engagement party. Engagement party at the party.
Okay.
So he's like, yo, come, I'm having my engagement party.
Yeah.
And so I went to his, he was like in a little corner of this La Dolce Vita was the series parties and Harrow and all the guys were there, the Soul Candy guys, the DJs and there was this DJ playing and I heard the grooves and I was like, I still regard myself like a little bit of like an introvert or a shyer guy than normal. But for some reason I went up to Duda and I was like, yo, can I sing over these beats?
Wow.
He didn't know me.
Yeah.
And I remember that look in his face, man, because Duda's also like, Duda's a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's not a no. He's like, sure. You know? And then next thing I knew, I was singing whatever was coming to mind, whether it was a Sade or Bob Marley or just a melody that I heard. And then this trumpet guy rocked up. And it was literally like that. Because his brother, Mo's brother, Chaps, was doing the promotions of the party. He was doing the street posters and whatever. So he was there.
Mm.
So he called his brother and he's like, yo, come and play trumpet. There's a cool vibe here. And then I started sharing my mic with Mo.
Yeah.
So I would sing and I'd sing again, you know? And that's how Mikasa was birthed. After that, everybody was like, we need your album. Can we take pictures? And I just remember being lank, freaked out, excited all at the same time, not understanding what was going on. I was fresh out of varsity. I was trying to look for a job, man. I just wanted a marketing gig. Yeah. That's all. And then it took about 3 months for me to beg Duda to just allow me to record a song, to write a song over a beat and whatever it was. I didn't understand the house world. I wanted to be a John Mayer. You know, like it's really been my dream my whole life is just to be on my guitar and sing. And then Mikasa started. We recorded These Streets.
That was the first song. That was
the first damn song, bro. It's insane, dude. And you know, like, I know it sounds lang cheesy, but I really believe that Mikasa was destined to be a thing.
God works in mysterious ways, man.
Like, I struggle to believe that a lot of times in other things. But for certain things, like, it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's like, it was part of the, it was in the writing, you know?
So if you didn't go to that part, we wouldn't have these streets, your body.
Sure. Like, if you didn't get fired, you wouldn't be here. That's the same thing.
No, I like that.
But it's
like,
true, bro. Like, and that's for me, after I'm done with this interview, is going to be the main point in my head for the rest of the day, is that certain things are meant to happen.
Yeah.
And we might not like them in those moments of time, but they need to happen.
Yeah.
Mikasa needed to want to break up to be where it is now.
Hmm.
We needed to do that. Hmm. Because every love relationship needs to go through a pit in order to see the sun. Like, you need to.
Yeah.
So that will be my main taking. I don't care what we talk about more here, but that will be the thing that I'm reminded of again.
How do you feel about killing Liquid Deep's career?
You're crazy, man. So Zion's a really good friend of mine. Now, I'm going to say he's a good friend. I'm going to say that he's a guy that I'm trying to spend a lot more time with to become a friend.
Yeah.
Because I think that when you come across this industry, there's not a lot of people that I look at and think I want to be mates with them.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong. It's just a click.
Yeah.
It's just a click. Like, I'm an ordinary guy, bro.
Yeah,
like, and sometimes I feel like I'm amongst extraordinary people.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so weird. When we started, man, I didn't understand the comparison, because they were DJ with a singer and we were a DJ playing keys with a trumpeter and a singer. And yes, we were both doing house music, but it was drastically different in my opinion.
Mm.
You know, some people say that we sound the same.
Mm.
Our music, Mikasa, not Mikasa and Liquid Deep. Mikasa sounds the same. And I'm like...
Like you got a sound.
Yes. And also they mean... I know that some people mean it in a bad way.
Mm.
And I'm like, I think to myself, if you think that these streets sounds the same as Jigga, you have a serious ear problem because they're drastically different.
Yeah.
Stevie Wonder sounds the same on every track.
Mm.
But every track sounds different. But it's Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
And people always ask us like, oh, you're going to change your sound? I'm like, no, man. We're not going to change the sound. It's going to stay like that. But Liquid Deep, when we started, Liquid Deep, it's funny because they were a huge source of inspiration for me.
Okay.
I dig them. I love Liquid Deep.
Yeah.
I think Zion, and I've mentioned this online before, I think he's one of the most talented musicians in this country right now.
Mm.
People don't know that about him because he's not doing mainstream now,
yeah.
But he's talented.
Yeah.
He's really, really talented. Yeah. So when we started, it was weird because we would do gigs together. And we would be hanging out.
Oh,
and everybody else thinks we're beefing. Or we're like, so I never felt that. They went through their own issues that had nothing to do with Mikasa. Mikasa brought a bit of competition to that scene. Competition is good.
It's good, yeah.
And then I think, again, like Zion wouldn't be where he is now.
If he didn't go through that so journey.
Sometimes, like, you have to look at... I try and look at things like that all the time.
What would have been dope is a Liquid Deep Mikasa collab. Oh, that would have been
dope. So I've written the song
dope.
With Zion. A beautiful song that we've never released. It's there, and we'll see what happens with it. But I think that dream, because a lot of people, when I mentioned that we were together in the studio, it really got a lot of attention. Because I think a lot of people that are fans of our music have been wanting to see
and
it.
The genre,
and it will happen.
Yeah,
it's already done. It's just a matter of release.
How was it performing for Barack Obama, bro?
It was random. It was really scary. It was random. I remember Tsepi, our booking agent at the time, she got a call and she thought it was an absolute joke. She thought it was a prank because they said no.
Did you charge them 20K?
We didn't charge.
Oh, wow.
No, dude, how do you charge Barack Obama? What? Like, you want us to come to DC? Sure. Just hook up our flights. We literally got paid flights and accommodation.
Okay.
We weren't trying to do anything more than that. Arrived there and they announced us. We were backstage, ready to go on stage. They announced us and nobody said anything. It was dead quiet. And that was a really scary moment for me because it, like, you had to depend fully on the power of music.
And the experience.
Exactly. And you know, like, it's sometimes you get into a comfort zone of, they know my songs, they know my vibe, they dig me. You know, if they hear, they dig me. So, boom, it's easy game. Now, so there, and then there was also the band from South Africa, and the first guy to come out was me, this white dude. You know, like, and I'm sure that none of them even thought this, but in my mind I was thinking like, shucks, man, maybe I should have worn like a African attire or something, you know. But we did it, and we rocked the show, dude. It was amazing. Yeah. It was phenomenal. It was a pivotal moment in our career because it was something that a lot of people spoke about.
Mm. We're speaking about it now. We're
speaking
still.
About yeah. it now still. It's still something that we brag about. It's bragworthy.
Yeah. Did you get to meet really him?
Cool. No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. I mean, I remember the whole experience was, we were I don't know if you've been to the States, but the blocks are massive. Okay. Like when you speak about blocks, they're huge. Yeah. So there was like four blocks blocked off by army trucks and all this. And when we would perform, we had to go straight off stage. Back into your room, and then you'd go. I remember we went into like this media area where we did interviews, and then back. So we never got to mingle or anything. It was really high security type thing.
Who else have you met that's famous like via music?
Well, I've managed to rub shoulders with a lot of people that I admire a lot. Mm. I mean, when you ask me that question, straight to what comes to mind is people like Brahim Masikela, Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Legends.
These are people that I've not just met with, I've worked with. Ray Phiri. Bravus Mahlasela, who I recently worked with. Jonathan Butler, who I'm currently writing for. It's just incredible. Like,
my 2000 Google this shit.
When you speak to me about this, like, I could tell you that, yeah, I met Drake, and I'm doing like those are cool.
You met Drake?
Yeah, we opened up for him when he came here. So we got to meet him. You know, we did. We've opened up for a whole bunch of cool people. Yeah. But for me, like when you talk to me about legends that I've met that I've through music, I think about the people close to home that really mean a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Oliver Mtukudzi.
Oof.
His second last show on this earth was in my restaurant.
Wow.
And it was an open mic, dude. And he was like, "Nah, I want to go on stage." And he wasn't well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "You want to go on my open mic stage?" Like, it's crazy. So these are the people that I think of. I've also had the privilege of meeting new school legends for me, like people like Nasty C.
Wow.
I feel it's an honor to have rubbed shoulders with Nasty C.
For real?
He's one of my favorite musicians in this country. I think he's phenomenally talented. I've managed to rub shoulders with Black Coffee. Black Coffee, I regard him as a good friend. I regard him as a brother figure, somebody that we can lean on. So these are the type of people that I think I one day want to be able to tell my kids, like, yo, man, I was there with them. And I know I'm missing a lot of people because I've had the privilege. I've been in studio with Wizkid, with Davido. I've met these. Dibange is a good friend. These people I regard as like my legends.
Mm.
The people that I want to tell my kids. Kirk Whalum. I don't know if you're on Kirk Whalum.
No.
My 2000s must really Google it. I'm on Mikasa's on Kirk Whalum's upcoming album. He's one of the biggest jazz names in the world. He's one of the best saxophonists in the world. So these are the type of people that I've had the opportunity of meeting and calling friends.
And have you ever met someone that was famous that you idolized but then ended up being a dick?
The most dramatic moment one of the most dramatic moments of my career was opening up for John Legend.
Okay.
Growing up.
Idolized the man.
Growing up, you know when you idolize to the point that you're actually trying to sound like him? So you would change from, "It is ordinary people," to like, "We're just ordinary people. We didn't need the way to grow." And you know, you try and do that because you idolize the dude so much. So here we are opening up for him at Santon Convention Center. Mikasa's at a very interesting moment of its career. These streets is fire at the moment. It was record of the year. We were like, we had all the attention. And we came out. We were opening up for him. We had a 30-minute slot. We did two songs. Mini Lamini came on. "Thank you very much for Mikasa." Switched off all our sound. And we were told to get off stage. And I was so gutted because I didn't understand. And then what made it worse is that Mini was trying to say that John Legend is coming up next. But everybody was still shouting, "Mikasa. We want more. We want more." That time, it's John Legend's show. Now, what happened? You know, and then again, you heard it through the grapevine. And what happened was apparently his management didn't enjoy that we were putting the stage on fire like we were. So they cut us off.
Yes.
So that he could have the attention. When he finished his show, people were asking for Mikasa. Like, it was insane. So that really bothered me.
Wow.
Because and ever since then, I mean, I still dig the dude's music, and I still think if I ever got to meet him, I'd want to tell him about that story because I need to get off my shoulders.
Yeah.
If I ever had the opportunity to link with him. But
because he should have been embracing you guys.
You know what, dude? You know what grills me about this whole opening up for things for artists? It's not the other stuff. Yes, it irritates me. The stuff that irritates people like AKN, that's those sort of people, irritates me too. But the whole thing about opening up for people is that I feel like they don't care. They don't really care who's opening up for them. When we do shows as Mikasa and we choose our lineup,
you care.
Bro, I go and chill with them. I go and watch their show. And I'm not saying that Drake needs to come and watch my show, but I'm like, at least there's that thing of like, yo, thanks for opening up for me.
Yeah.
And welcome to South Africa. We from here.
Like a cosign, you know?
It's just that thing. And I've only had that from the legends. And that's why I say to you, when I meet Ladysmith, Black Mambazo, the whole crew made us feel like superstars.
Wow.
And I'm like, yo, we're chilling with multiple Grammy Award winners. Yeah. And they were like, wow, Mikasa's here. I'm like, nah, guys. No, this is not fair.
What's the strangest thing that's happened at your shows, man? Any thongs on stage?
The strangest thing that I can think of, yeah, we've had all that stuff being thrown on stage.
But hey,
the strangest thing that I can think of was one day in a very deep village somewhere. I can't remember where it was. I just remember getting off stage, and this girl was inside our car that we had rented for this gig, and she was going through my bag. And I was like, "What is she doing?" And next thing, she walked out. I kid you not. She walked out with my socks. And she's running out of the car. And she's like, I've got Jay's socks. And I'm like, what? And then the bouncers are chasing. And I'm like, no, it's just socks. Like, it's okay, dude. And then they grabbed and they brought me back the socks. And I'm like, no. This is just weird. She could have kept the socks, but like, so that was a really weird moment.
Yeah.
But we've had some weird things. We once thought we were being followed by like kidnappers, and then they turned out to be just fans, you know. They followed us all the way to our guest house. It was crazy. We were scared, dude. We were like turning turns. And it's just some ladies. I'm like, oh man.
Oh gosh. The ship is sinking. You can only save one. Moti or Duda.
Hey. Are you gonna save? And none of them can swim well, so I'm like thinking about I don't know which one of you guys swim better, because I'll try and swim the guy that can't swim as well, which I think it's Mo. Huh? I think I'd have to save Mo, because I think Duda would be able to get out on his own.
Oh gosh, do you guys ever fight though, man?
We fight low key. Yeah. We fight without talking. It's a very bad problem. It's a poison.
Yeah.
It's a poison that we're still trying to deal with. We've gotten a bit better at it, but
then the problem becomes bigger than it was.
Duda's old school.
Yeah,
Duda's an old school guy that grew up with very old school principles, and Duda is not a guy that would confront somebody.
Yeah,
he's a guy that would be like, oh, you said that. Okay, sharp. Yeah. And you can't do that with Mikasa because we together every day. So we've had some altercations, but I think that we've always spoken about it in a respectful manner. Never ever have we had screw you, man.
Yeah.
Never. But we've had our fish.
And the longer you work together, the longer you know, okay, this is how Duda is.
Exactly.
This is how Jay is.
When people ask me about a band, I just say, have you ever been in love before?
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a relationship? That's what it's like.
What do you think about my piano, bro?
It's an interesting one. I love what it's done for house music. I'm a little bit confused at the moment, hence why the little bit of hesitation with the answer. I'm a little bit confused around what exactly my piano is now.
Yeah.
I feel like it's evolving. I feel like house music is going through a really fast cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Where house was where we were.
Yeah.
What we were doing, it was in that soulful tip, it was that
vocal,
yeah, it was soul. The vocal, it was the thing, and then it moved into this gom phase, which I really didn't like.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like it. It's personal.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people that don't like my music.
Yeah.
And I always said, that's okay, dude. Yeah, you can't expect everybody to like my music.
Yeah. You're so not Michael Jackson.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And even he didn't have hate, so
yeah.
When the whole gom thing came out, I just thought like it wasn't very musical. Mm. And I've always been for musicality around things. I'm a songwriter. I'm a musician. I love that.
But you then want emotion.
And then I started to realize that gom was touching a lot of people. And that's a talent on its own. That you are able to create a simple melodic song that clicks with people. That's a talent on its own. But I knew that gom wouldn't go far because to the ear, it's repetitive.
Yeah.
So when you hear something repetitive, people get bored of it.
Mm.
No matter how much of a trend it is, it will pass.
Yeah.
It's a trend.
And that's the difference between classic songs.
Exactly. Well, a timeless track.
Timeless, yeah.
A timeless track is, it's a different, it's not a summer track. Yeah. So everybody's always after the summer anthem. Mikasa's always after a timeless song. Okay. That's what we're after. We want, like, we want to have a song that will be relevant every summer.
Yeah.
Not just for the summer.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's different. It's it's a different mind frame. Mm-hmm. So then my piano thing started, and I really dug my piano when it started because it was slow.
Mm.
So as a singer, I digged it a lot more because it had more space. Mm. So if you're doing a song at 124, you don't have a lot of space to sing.
Yeah, the room is...
You know? And when it's all of a sudden it's 115, you all of a sudden have all the space.
Even the track expands from 4 minutes becomes six.
Exactly. So you have more space. I dig that. But nowadays, I mean, I got sent a track by Oskido who wants me to jump on a track, and I'm going to do it. And he's like, I don't know if you like it because it's my piano. And I'm like, dude, this sounds exactly like mid-tempo Glenn Lewis days. Like, this sounds like those. So it's weird. And then the other day I was on Live Amp and they were playing some. I think it might have been Moonchild even.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think it was Moonchild. It was somebody else. But I'm like, this is Kwaito.
Mm.
Why is this my piano? I don't understand. So I think it's gotten a little bit out of hand. And I think what it's doing, it's evolving to come back to the South African iconic house music that we all love, which includes the 115s and the 120s and the 125s.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to Kabza and Maphorisa, that's exactly what they're doing with, like what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. They've made it a lot more musical, which is what Maphorisa always does to music. He just gives it a little bit of musicality.
Let's talk about your love life, man. How's the missus, man?
Amazing, amazing. I'm gonna keep it brief.
Yeah.
Because My private life really is my private life.
Yeah.
And my wife is somebody that I admire a lot. I could never even tell you on air. I'm nowhere near ready to tell anybody about what we've been through.
Mm.
It's way beyond your wildest imaginations. Yeah. You wouldn't even believe me if I had to tell you what we've been through in the last year. It's been the hardest year of my life.
Wow.
To the point of we thought that we might lose one another.
Wow.
Physically.
Wow.
So yeah.
That's crazy.
It's been really hard. But she, you know, our love life is, it's amazing, dude. Mm. I'm so in love.
Yeah.
And I am not ashamed to say that one bit.
Yeah.
I'm about my wife, I'm about my family, I'm about my home and my things.
Isn't it weird that when you're young, you're always chasing different ladies, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you get older, you just want that one.
Sure. It's weird because when I started Mikasa, I remember the first show we ever did. It was in East London. It was a club called Telemanka, and I was fresh out of varsity, and we'd just done the show, and we had all this attention. And I remember all these girls jumping into our bus, wanting to go to the hotel. And I was like, what? This is my first gig ever, right? So I'm like, and at varsity, I wasn't the guy that would go for the ladies. Like, I was shy, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are all these girls in here? And I remember so clearly waking up that next morning and saying to Mo, yo, I don't want to be this person
because
I'm going to die like this.
Mm.
Like, this is not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about this thing. Like, and since that day, I told myself, like, I need to find myself a woman that I'm going to love and that I'm going to stay focused, and she's going to help me to stay focused.
Yeah.
And a couple of months later, I found my wife, and I just kept it really low key because I didn't want people having opinions over my relationship.
And you're private.
Bro, like, I, the other day I saw a dude posting a picture about his kid and saying, like, how cute is she? And people are like saying, no, she's not cute. I'm like, dude, I would kill somebody. Yes, it's really hard, this whole opinion thing, bro.
Yeah,
so,
I've never posted my son, bro. Never, ever, ever. He was doing himself.
The last 2 years, I took a decision to post more about my wife and I.
Yeah.
And everybody's been congratulating me in the last 2 years for being married or whatever. I've been married for a while. But I knew I did that for a very specific reason. I did that because I really feel like in our world, we need more role models for the youth to look up to, to find pictures of a really good man, somebody that really loves his wife, somebody that's not ashamed to do it, somebody that's got nothing to hide. I'm not afraid if I'm going to make it onto any list of whatever. I know who I am, dude. Like, so that's why I post this stuff, because I have confidence in it.
Yeah.
All I want to try and be is somebody that my kids can look to.
Yeah.
And I know that I've got this position of influence. And if you're following me, I hope that I can sharpen you in a better way. I can make you a better human being and vice versa.
Yeah.
That's why I do it more.
Yeah, no, I got you, man. No, I like that. Have you always been into black women, or it doesn't matter for you?
I've never felt that I was attracted to a specific color of woman. Yeah. It's a weird thing. I've dated across the board.
Snow bunnies.
Before I was with my wife, I was with a white girl from Bloemfontein. Mm. You know, like, so it was different. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, I'll tell you that much. I one day want to write a book about being in a multicultural relationship, because I think it's phenomenal. I remember, like, the one big difference was, like, Coco would always want to be under hot blankets with the heater on and the heated blanket on. I'm like, yo, man, I can't sit next to you. I want the aircon. And so there's a lot of, like, funny, like, random.
Have you ever been with a celebrity, bro?
No, I've never.
You've never?
No, I've never. And I will never, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You're not into celebs, no?
I just think that, like, it's not even like the thing, man. Like, I think I've bumped into a lot of women that are celebrities that I think I could vibe with.
Yeah.
I have a lot of great conversations with a lot of different women that are celebrities.
Yeah.
I've never gone to the point of thinking, like, yo, I want to be with them. But it's not a thing. I never chased anything. So when you say, like, do I want black honeys or did I want celebrity things? I never thought of it, bro. I ended up falling in love with the woman that I'm with now.
Dude, I heard a funny rumor that you hit Lebo Lookworm with a brick, like he was your friend.
It's not altogether a lie. Okay. It's not altogether true either. Yeah. So when I moved to Joburg, I have a friend. His name is Oz.
Okay.
I went to school with him. So when I arrived here, I said to him, yo, man, I want to get to know people. Like, can you hook me up with, like, your circle, you know? So yeah. I went out for dinner with him and his friends.
Yeah.
And I met Lebo.
Yeah.
I met V the Vowel, Velapi. And then I met Coco.
Mm.
She was there. And I met all her friends at that time. Not once did I even have an attraction to Coco then.
Yeah.
It was not a thing.
Yeah.
Lebo and I, we started to hang out with Velapi and Oz.
Okay.
And we were making music and I had the studio, so they would come by.
Yeah.
And then they broke up and life went on.
Yeah.
And then for some odd reason, I don't understand how or why, I still can't recall the moment where my wife and I started talking.
Okay.
But it was very innocent approach. It was a thing. And then when we started low-key seeing one another,
yeah,
I felt really bad.
Mm.
I felt really bad. Why? Because I had some serious feelings for this woman now.
Mm.
Feelings that were abnormal, that felt...
You can't control.
And I know it sounds really cliche, but like I've dated a lot of girls and I've always, since a young age, I've always desired to be married. I've always wanted to be a father and a husband because of the way that I grew up. But
yeah.
And I never had this feeling, but now it was weird because I knew the guy that she'd been with before.
Oh.
And I needed to address that.
Mm.
And I called Coco over to my house and I was going to break up with her.
Okay.
And then I couldn't get to that. For me, what it feels like, and I say this with a lot of confidence because I've been married to my wife now for nearly 10 years and things are good. I know that she's my soulmate.
Yeah.
I know that this was meant to be.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a chat, Lebo and I.
Yeah.
You know,
so
we got
when
together.
You met her, she was dating Lebo or they'd just broken up?
No, when I met her, they were dating.
Okay.
Then, but I wasn't so close with them that I knew all their personal affairs.
Gotcha.
Then they broke up.
Mm.
And then time went on. Months went on.
Oh, okay.
And then we started chatting.
Yeah.
And for me, Lebo did my first photo shoot.
Yeah.
When I was younger, when I started dating Coco, I had a lot more like pride towards the whole thing.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, man, whatever. Like, I don't want to talk to this guy anymore.
Yeah.
And now, like, I'm old, dude. Like, I'm 30, bro. Like, I don't have time for. I'm married with Coco. Like,
yeah.
It's not a joke, you know. We're not dating or anything. But yeah, life is.
And you're still tied with Lebo, ne?
We don't talk.
Okay.
We don't talk. I just think just the nature of life and how things are. But
you know, people grow apart.
I don't have issues with him. If I saw him, I'd greet him.
Yeah.
I'm not.
A lot of people say that white guys aren't packing. Is that true, bro?
I don't know. I mean, statistically, when you look at things, maybe we have a slight disadvantage in that form. But
you're from Venda, dog.
I can't speak on
you
my.
You're from
behalf.
Venda, dog. You got a bazooka up in
let's
there.
Let's just say that my wife is happy, you know? And she's black. So, I mean, I don't really know. But
oh, man. Dude, I love you so much, man.
Oh,
you're
bro,
so cool,
you too, man.
Thanks. I want to ask you some funny questions, but. Before we get into that, we can't finish without chatting about all the drama that's been happening in the country.
Yeah.
What's your stance as, you know, a father about gender-based violence?
You know, man, I've always been like, I've always loved reggae music a lot. I specifically love Bob Marley a lot because of what he spoke about. And it goes back to the whole Michael Jackson thing. I think that one of the things that really drew me towards spirituality was that I really believe that, I still believe that at the core of spirituality, regardless of whatever religion you believe in, whatever you want to call your God, I really believe that there's a God and we all just call him different things. It's love. And that's what I've always wanted to put out there is just this, if we could just love one another a lot more in what we say and how we handle one another, the world would obviously be a better place, but the world isn't. The world is messed up at the moment. It's really going through a huge societal issue that I don't know what's going on. And for the last 3-4 days with everything that's been going on, I've really been impacted a lot by it. And I've been speechless and also desperate to like want to make a difference, but I don't really know what to do. Yep. The best thing I can do, and in my opinion, is around my friends and my circle.
Yeah,
I can tell them.
Yep.
You know, like one of the things that I heard the other day, which I implemented straight away, is I was with the boys and I heard somebody saying that we shouldn't be speaking about women the way that we speak when we're with the guys.
Yep.
And when I heard that, I was like, man, maybe I need to change.
Yep.
And we were talking and they were like, yo, look at that, honey. And I'm like, yo, guys.
Dude, please, I'm in the same boat, bro. I'm in the same. My woman has me all the time because I'm like, stop.
But it's a weird thing. The other day I posted my father-in-law and the women are like all going on about my father-in-law. And I'm like, yo, you're doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
You're doing the same damn thing. So I breaks my heart around things and I'm trying to do whatever I can with things. I wrote a song that I haven't put out yet. Titled Winene, the name of the girl, but it's really about everything that's going on. I can play it for you actually, and you can come and hear it in the studio if you want.
Awesome, yeah.
And I just think it's really sad, and I hope that I can teach my kid how to be a man, and I can teach my people around me how to be a man, and that's why I told you, like, I want to post more about these things. The other day, it really impacted me because a girl tweeted and she said, "Yo, everybody should really listen to Mikasa's Your Body." And it's a song, and I was like, wow, amidst all of this, you went and found comfort in a song that my favorite song that I've ever written for Mikasa is a song called Your Body. And the way that I wrote it is a respectful man looking at a woman. But the connotations that I make, and I don't know if that's the right word, but the wordplay that I use there, it's a thing of respect. You know, it's a girl's there and I treat her like a stop sign. Like I stop, I respect her, I look right, I look left. You know, it's that thing of like abiding by the law. Abiding by systems that are there to make sure. So, long answer made short is that I really am 100% against any gender-based violence.
Yeah.
I'm against racism to a huge form, completely. Something that breaks my heart. Mm-hmm. I'm against everything that is non-love. And all I will try and do for the rest of my life is to spread love wherever I can. Mm-hmm. The other day I did a gig in the
CBD.
The heart of the city,
yeah.
Where they were doing the looting the day before. And we did our show and I felt horrible to perform because I don't know how to go there and smile and dance.
Well, all of this is happening.
And then I remembered the power of music, especially on the African continent. Yeah. We've always used music to heal or to mourn. So we did this show and gave everybody my everything. And afterwards I said, I don't mind if you guys, I hope you guys don't mind, but can we pray together?
Wow.
Just for that moment. There was a couple of thousand people there. And, you know, it was an impactful moment for us, I believe. And because I believe that when we agree on something, it can be done, you know. Yeah. So these are the small things that I would like to do. I'm buying pepper sprays now for the girls at UJ. We're going to be dropping them off in the next couple of days. So small things that we can do. But I really hope things can turn around.
With all the looting, did you ever at once consider going back to Portugal?
I have never in my life, since being in South Africa, thought of leaving. But on the second day of everything happening, the first time I said to my wife, I'm like, what is our plan B? Right? And it's a hard discussion to have. I told her that I would only ever leave if there was an extreme thing of, because, I had this conversation with her last night over some dinner. I was telling her, you know what? If we didn't have kids, I would be way more radical in my approach. I would want to be the world changer. But now I've got my own Cubs.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm thinking about them. You become selfish, bro. You yeah. become selfish yeah. around that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I don't plan on going anywhere. I really feel like I'm part of the change, and we have to really stand up now.
I'm glad you're going on,
more than anything.
We still need more of those hits, man.
Yeah,
my favorite song that you've ever done is Over the Rainbow.
Oh, man,
I love that song. Shucks. Yeah, it used to make me go crazy, wow, dude.
A special song. It's a song that, and you know, like I wrote that to an EDM beat.
Yeah.
Off Cosmic Gate.
Yeah.
And that went number one on 5. And then DeCapo remixed it. And then it went number one on Metro. it was like phenomenal. It's just like, I love that song.
Dude, we all know that you love food. Why do we hoi onion on the braai stand before we braai?
To clean the braai stand.
Oh, is
so
it?
So the acidity in the onion helps to remove the thing, and it essentially sterilizes your grid.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. It's a black thing that I thought we just did.
Nah, I also do it. It's a thing. Let's not put any color to it. We all do it, I swear.
How many restaurants you got now, yeah?
I got one.
You only got one.
I got one in Pretoria, called Something's Cooking by Jay. It's been there now for almost 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole nother bizarre thing. I never wanted to be anything food.
Yeah.
It's weird. The other day, I got the fright of my life. I was doing a show with Futsi Mahlasela, and we were performing on guitars together, and he got introduced as the iconic South African musician. And Jay got introduced as the foodie that sings. I was like, what?
After all these
the
hits.
The foodie that sings? Come on. But the food thing is just blown out, way out of proportion. I love cooking, man. Yeah. I love it. This is where I cook. I chill out, get ingredients, and cook. I love it.
And it seems like the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, you know? Because exactly. You've come full circle.
My mom had a restaurant for 18 years.
Yeah.
My father did food and beverage.
You got the gin thing,
the
which
gin
is
thing.
Nice.
Thanks,
which
bro.
Is nice. Thanks. Got me gin fucked up the other day, bro.
It's doing super well so far.
You're a chef, you're a singer, entrepreneur. You can only do one for the rest of your life. Which would it be?
Music.
Nah.
Nah, without a doubt, man.
Nah.
I'm not a chef, by the way. I'm a guy that likes cooking.
And you just happen to.
Yeah, I've never professed to be a chef.
Cool.
Out of respect for people that actually trained and did it for a living. I'm a dude that's blessed enough to have people that are interested in what I do.
Yeah.
It's bizarre, man. I posted a picture on Instagram of roast chicken and potatoes. That's where it started. Yeah. It was 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
And now I have a restaurant, a cookbook, a show, a TV. It's crazy.
Dude, your life is crazy. So you can literally go to your restaurant, perform with Mikasa, have food at your restaurant with your own gin.
Exactly. No, it's wild, dude. It's wild. I feel, and you know what? Like it's something that needs to be said, is that a lot of the kids look at me and they think that I have it all together.
Mm.
And I need to let you guys, everybody know that, like, I'm not making as much money as you think I'm making.
Mm.
I'm investing a lot of money in the hope that it will make me money.
Mm.
The restaurant is a very interesting thing. It's been open for nearly 3 years, and I don't think we've ever made enough money to brag about.
Yeah.
We've lost money. We've broken even. We've made a bit of money. Same with the gin. The gin's been around for eight months. I haven't made a cent. Every single cent that I get into it, I plow back into it in the hope that it will pop one day. So...
But that's you're leaving a legacy for your kids, you know?
Bro, you know what I'm doing more than that? I'm doing what I love.
Yeah.
And I'm doing what I feel is right in the moment. And I go for it. And that's why, even if it doesn't fail, I lost half a bar in a production company. Wow. I started a production company. Next thing I knew, I was half a bar down because I was carrying people's salaries off my performances. And I don't view that as a failure. I view that as a learning point.
I've lost half a bar at a club as well.
Just...
Yeah, I don't know what I was doing.
Party or what?
No, I bought a club.
Oh, yeah.
And then I don't know what I was doing, man. We were drinking the stock.
Hey. Yeah, that's the biggest problem, man. Owners and their tabs, bro.
Last question. You've won the lotto, 200 million. What are you going to do with it?
I'm definitely going to put most of it away for my kids, especially where I'm at now. I feel like I don't need a lot of money to make me happy. Matter of fact, I'm the guy that doesn't even know how much money he makes.
Hmm.
I don't. I all I know is that I just want to be able to pay my house, make sure that my wife and my kids get everything that they need, and that I can spoil my mom. That's all. Like, I honest to God, I don't know how much money I make a month. I know that my financial director will call me and say, like, yo, you need to be tight.
Boom.
Or yo, you can go and spoil yourself with something.
Yeah.
And that's how it works.
Yeah.
I'm blessed and fortunate enough to have two people in my life that I trust with my family, with everything I have. And that's my FD, Rui, and my business partner, Sergio.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Moti and Duda.
Yeah, no, they're part of it. But yeah, these are the people that literally look after my life.
Now, I'm the same like you, dude. I know people that are obsessed with money. And I'm so, like
the
dude,
whole thing of like winning the lotto. I probably just try and do some good. I'd probably try and put it away for my kids.
Yeah.
And I'd probably do something like lavish. Yeah. I'd probably go and buy myself like a new guitar or something like something old. I don't know. Hook up a meeting with John Mayer and pay him to talk to me.
Cool, man. Jay something. Bro, love you long time. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
through,
you for
man.
Having me. And I just, yeah, just once again, just shine some light on you, bro. Like, I know that you've been through a lot, and I know that it hasn't been easy. And I know that a lot of people look at you and they judge you and they spoil you with hate. But I would be really proud of what you've done. I know you've made some mistakes, and so
yeah, it's life, man. No one's perfect. So
that's the reality. So thanks for having me on your show.
It's
a real proud moment for me.
What I love about you, man, is that like you literally do everything I want to do, bro.
Oh man.
Hey, you stay in your own lane, tunnel vision.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And I appreciate that. Thanks, you know, they say you can't have it all, but to me, it seems like you literally do. But you know, as in life, like you're saying, you know, we always got to make room for growth.
And we all have a phenomenal thing inside of us. I think it just requires a lot of digging.
All right. So we need this podcast to go viral, which is why I think it's time for you to do that cover
Should
version.
Do something. Okay. Yeah. Let me go
so
get
we can
my
go
guitar
viral.
Let me get it real quick.
Cool, bro.
Do you want to know how this thing came about?
Yeah, tell us. Tell
So it's really weird. It's weird. But I lost a bet to my wife. She said that I should shave my beard, like trim my beard, because I was trying to grow my beard. And then she said, nah, I don't want this beard anymore. I'm like, nah, I want this beard. And then she's like, well, put it on your social media. Let's see what everybody else thinks. And if you lose, you're going to owe me something.
Yeah.
And then 97% of people said I should cut my beard. Like my wife said, wife is always right. And then I thought she was going to ask for something, you know, like, nice, you know. And she said, no, pick up a guitar and I want you to do a cover for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's weird. And she got her phone out. So she got a camera out. And then this is what I did. She told me the song, and then I went on the internet, got the lyrics, and
Sami, mangi hamana weguzo bamnandi pambili. Niamazina bangani bami bazo zana bantu babo. Awoskado, awotsebi, abo baby.
And you say,
hey,
hey,
zakeza. I see a part in you, baby, in your belly. Ooh, no, no, don't shake, shake, see a part in you, baby, in your belly. Baby, honey, love me. I see a part in you, baby, in your belly. Baby, honey, my see a part in you, baby.
Shit, my nigga. Wow. That's amazing, bro.
Thank you, man.
Dude, you just took me back to when the prophet told you that your calling is music, bro.
Damn, yeah, that was a crazy, crazy moment in my life. It's something that fuels me every day. I went to church for the very first time when I was 15, and I only went because it was at the girls' school, so I wanted to see all the girls. And then this prophet lady she was a guest speaker out of nowhere. She came and she said, she introduced herself to a room of about 1,000 people, and I was sitting there with my school uniform, and I was thinking, like, man,
I hope these church people don't do something crazy like call people up, because that would be really bad. I don't really want to go in front of all the girls go up on the stage. And I kid you not, bro, she started talking. 5 minutes into her introducing herself, she stopped and she pointed at me and she said, "I have a message for you from God." And I literally thought, this woman is crazy. She's like a fortune teller. She thinks she knows what God is saying. And she literally cut a long story short, but she told me God wanted to use me with music and wanted me to pick up the guitar. After her finding out that I played guitar when I was 11, and she said, "Yeah, God wants you to pick that up again, and He's going to use you in mighty ways in music." And when I look back at it now, I'm like, "Wow, this really is for the glory of God, and I hope that's how it remains forever." Maji, Mac G.
Thanks, bro.
Podcast and chill. Mac G, the Ghost Lady, and Len Moleko.
What is EbbenSense? EbbenSense is the largest online marketplace for service providers that offers services to customers, from housekeeping to simple carpentry. Or it could be that your car broke down and you want a mechanic, or you could be the person who has the skill. Well, do not hold your back. Join EbbenSense today. Join millions of other people that are using EbbenSense to get things done. We are here to bridge the gap between a service provider and customer from the comfort of your fingertips. Join EbbenSense today by simply going to www.ebbensenseglobal.com or download the app both on Play Store for Android and App Store for your iOS to sign up today. EbbenSense, solution at your fingertips.
For all you foodies out there, I'm unwrapping a McDonald's steak, egg, and cheese bagel. Ooh, look at this steak. And the juice running down the side. Got a little bit on the wrapper here. Mmm. And then the fluffy egg and real cheese folded over the side, looking just so good. Mmm. Grilled onions and a butter bagel too. Thumbs up for McDonald's steak, egg, and cheese bagel for breakfast. Love it. Mmm. Ba-ba-ba-ba. I participate in McDonald's.